Caught by the Sun, a bad day to be a soft one, and Alan Gow throws a tantrum. This is the Donington Park Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We are back and 2025 has now started. We were up at Donington Park this weekend and we are a little burnt,
yeah,
aren't we?
I'm not looking at you at all during this because the burn on the side of my face and the new haircut from today is awful. So very quick, there you go. You can now have your laughs. I'm saying dead start, dead fast, dead straight on the camera.
I noticed this morning when I got out the inside of my knees and my legs were quite red. But it was a decent day of racing. Not the best, but certainly not the worst.
I think I've certainly seen worse season openers than that, to be fair. Yeah.
At least we got racing at the right time this year compared to last year, and it was a hell of a lot drier.
And of course, it was my birthday weekend, hence the little rosette here.
Yes, you had a beer or two, didn't you?
One beer. And then a rum.
A rum that was quite cheap.
Yeah, annoyingly. I'm annoyed by cheap rum, but this weekend I was rather.
Yeah, you'll find out about that later with our predictions, which we will go through.
But also ran out of iced coffee by Harper's 10, which I think is madness. But I was going to buy your better half of iced coffee when I was getting the drinks in. And I can't believe
how much the ice creams were, but that might be something we have to have a look at some other stage of the season.
Right, shall we get into Saturday? So, neither of us watched qualifying on Saturday because
I had a birthday and I was up a mountain.
Yeah, you were climbing a mountain and I was travelling down to Donington at the time. So, apologies to sum things up very, very easily. Not a great deal happened. Camish took pole from Sutton. Chilton didn't get out due to a problem. He got to the top six. He didn't get out due to a boost issue. Big surprise, if you like, is that none of the BMWs got through, and Aaron Taylor-Smith potentially blocked Josh Cook on a fast lap earlier in the session. One of those where Cook could have made it clearer he was on a fast lap. Aaron Taylor-Smith could have probably done better to get out of the way. I haven't seen any penalties for it. I don't think any penalties were, and Josh Cook's reaction when interviewed was quite funny. So, it's, I'd say it was rustiness all round for everybody in a qualifying session.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that Moffitt hasn't changed his tune and went out nice and early, keeping the trend from last season.
In his defence, he had an ECU failure in FP1, which meant there were a session behind FP2. He had other gremlins in FP2, so by the time he actually went out to qualifying, it was effectively an FP1 for him.
The BMWs really did look a little bit off the pace in qualifying, didn't they?
They did, and Pearson was, I suppose, a slight surprise, you might say, breaking into that top six as well, qualifying fourth on the grid. I'm not going to go through the full grid because life's too short and this podcast is already going to be quite a long one today. That's pretty much Saturday in a nutshell. We'll say moving forward, we will be a bit more clued up on the qualifying stuff. It's just that this weekend, you, for reasons best known to yourself, decided to climb a mountain and say I was travelling. So,
Ingram topped both three practice sessions. I thought he was going to take pole in qualifying, but it was the Nappers that won out. Shall we get into race one then?
Yes, absolutely. So, as is the season's rules this year, there is two compounds of tyres to run for the weekend. You get one soft allocation, or this weekend you got one soft allocation, the other two were the mediums. Yep. An interesting little mix of the tyre on the opening race. Obviously, brand new season. We haven't got the data for how the cars are going to run on these tyres. Nope. And also, remarkably, it was a very hot day, which I think
apparently also Goodyear don't have much information on how the tyres are going to run either.
It's not been a good year so far. So as I say, a good mix of tyres. Both of the Napa boys went on the softs, whereas Ingram decided to go on the medium behind him. Pearson had a slight jump start. You can see it on the replays, unfortunately. You can see that's just creeping, which really ruined his race because that gave him a 10-second time penalty.
It was an even bigger shame because it was a 10-second time penalty, which is pretty much the standard for a jump start. The late safety car that we then had really put pay to it and sent him back down the grid for the final standings, unfortunately. But he raced well.
Yeah, we've already got one of the contenders for move of the season in the first corner, which was Sutton on Camish. So basically, Sutton forced Camish to the inside to defend before making a cutback to get underneath him. And that Sutton and a cutback, there's not a more iconic duo in the touring cars than that.
He just has this habit of measuring it so perfectly as well, not making any real contact, maybe just brushing across that rear bumper as he looks to get underneath. And he had a really good run down the craners to make sure that he had the inside for the old hairpin, but he was already ahead by that point.
Yeah, what is interesting is that whilst I think, and we're going to cover this as the review goes on, whilst there's probably going to be a two-horse race out front, the rest of the field is very well sort of bunched together. Lots
chopping and changing.
There's not a lot of difference between them. That can be changed when a errant Ford locks up and goes into the back of you, which is what Osborne did to Lloyd at the chicane. That sent Lloyd across the gravel and also affected Shedden, had to take evasive action. Yep. Not the greatest of returns for Gordon Shedden this weekend. He was caught up in a lot of incidents, not all necessarily of his own making. It's crucial to point out, but he was caught up in a lot of problems this weekend.
Yeah, Camish and Sutton started to pull away on the softs and actually made quite a good lead on Ingram, who on the medium tyres, they would come in a little bit later, but as you get on further into the race, they really came into their own and began to be the good race tyre, especially with the punches that we then went on to see.
Yeah, out front, Cook started to apply pressure on Hill, who and was able to get through and make it stick. The BMW just seemed to lack a bit of oomph this weekend, and part of that reason is because the hybrid, which weighed about 50,000 metric tons, has been taken out of the cars for this year, and that has really affected the BMW's weight distribution. Of course, it's the only rear-wheel drive car on the grid now. Yep. So they are set up differently to the front-wheel drive cars by definition from where their drivetrains are. And they've found this year taking that hybrid out has just affected how they balance their weight, and that's given them some performance problems.
I find it, if we see it's sort of like gradually improve over the season, I go, okay, yeah, maybe that was the reason. If I don't see any improvement over the season, then I'm struggling to see how that is a good enough reason to see why they're so far off the pace. Hill kept himself out of trouble in this race and actually ended up with a decent result. But if you get everyone finishing and everyone running well, then we could see the BMWs possibly struggle to finish top 10 sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because most of the time you take weight out of the car and everyone's really, really happy. And Tom Chilton alluded to this, we're jumping forward a little bit to race three, where he said he's one of the heavier drivers on the grid. And his words, not mine, make that clear.
He's a tall lad.
He said that on the grid to Louise after race three. And add that with the hybrid, he's really struggled with the old regulations.
Yep.
With Hill, obviously he's one of the smaller drivers on the grid. The weight may have just helped. And also whether BMW has this engine, which is
mid-engined
akin to DTM cars, potentially, is one way of looking at it.
Yep.
Perhaps it just hasn't. And they've obviously built a title-winning car around the old regulations. Now they've got to try and adapt to them. And I don't think it's any surprise that the rest of the field looks a lot more close and competitive without the extra weight of the hybrid, potentially BMW aside.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it develops over the season. It's certainly one we're going to keep looking out for.
Yep.
And comparing the BMWs, how they perform to each other, because we've got many different experiences of drivers within that team.
Yeah, by lap 7, Aaron Taylor-Smith had an issue and slowed, which would put him into the pits and put him out. That was an alternator problem.
Start of a bad weekend, unfortunately, for Aaron Taylor-Smith.
Well, just strike that and put Toyota, to be honest with you. It wasn't a great start for them. Ingram was then able to get through on Camish, fairly uncontested. Camish, at this point's tyres were already starting to go off, and he was in full tyre preservation mode, so more or less sucked the indicator on and let Ingram through, which is understandable. As I say, we know the Napa struggles on the soft tyre, and that will be a little bit of a foreshadowing to what's to come, I think. Jelly was off at McLean's. We've got no idea how, because replays in the new year are still not a thing we're allowed to see. Shedden did come away with damage with his front bumper flapping away, potentially involved.
Typical Shedden piece of damage.
Potentially involved, I'm not sure.
Possibly been clipped on the tyre stacks that we had down at the chicane.
Yes, he would get the dreaded meatball flag as well.
Yep.
Cook were then nipped by Chilton with a typically Cook neat and tidy move at the chicane. Then the first of the tyre failures of the weekend hit Adam Morgan, who had to retire from the right or pull over with a puncture, which is... would become a bit of a theme and a bit of a worry, shall we say.
Yeah, he'd already struggled in qualifying, so he was trying to make progress back through the field. Maybe pushed the tyre a little bit too hard, but I believe he was actually on a medium for race one, which makes it slightly stranger, because Camish, who also succumbed to a puncture, was on the soft.
Yep, out front, Ingram started to close and put a bit of pressure on Sutton, who again was starting to nurse the softer tyre home a little bit. Chilton then clashed with Cook. It was a bit messy, this, to be honest with you. Cook and Chilton side by side going into the chicane. Chilton tapped, didn't really give, in my view, didn't give Cook enough space. And actually, it seems to be a view of the marshals or stewards share, because that's, we'll get to penalty corner later. This would send Cook careering into the tyre stack, causing massive damage on the side of Cook's car. And actually,
a load of cosmetic damage, wasn't it?
Well, more than that, it closed off his exhaust pipe as well, which really made him struggle for pace for the rest of the race. And it also moved the tyre stack. There's something to mention the tyre stack there, actually. So during FP1 and FP2, you may have noticed, if you're watching there, if you're there at the circuit, or if you found footage, etc., tyre stacks weren't being used. And this is because Toker have invested in the high-resolution cameras, I think we mentioned last season.
Yep.
That is certainly used in other forms of racing. As I say, I think we've definitely mentioned this podcast before. And the sort of a peace offering was given to the drivers, if you will, which is we have invested in the technology, we'll take away the tyre stacks, but you need to behave and respect track limits. That didn't happen because there were lots of track limit violations, lots of black flags. I think Ronan Pearson picked up 6 warnings. I think three drivers went into the sin bin. And Alan Gow got a bit angry about all of this and put the tyre stacks back in for qualifying.
I want a few things to say on this.
Please do.
So first of all, there were 4 cameras for Donington at like 3 different areas of the circuit. So you had the exit of Redgate, which is the first corner. Mm-hmm. You had the exit of the old hairpin, which we know drivers like to run a little bit wider and dip their
wheels,
tyres into the gravel and kick up a little bit. And then also at the chicane, where we know it is prime opportunity to take as much curb as possible to straight line it and get as much speed through there as possible. If you keep one, why are you not doing it each corner? I know it's probably expensive technology, but if you want the championship to evolve and drivers to adhere to these regulations, then they're probably going to go, well, why can I take an advantage at this corner and not that corner?
Can I give a reason to that? I think if all the tracks are owned by the same people, that would be a possibility. Yes. But I think in the interest of fairness, they won't be able to do it every corner on the touring car grid as it is at the minute. We've got a mix of track owners.
Yep.
And therefore, like VAR and the FA Cup, have it at all grounds or none at all. You can't, in my view, you can't pick and choose. So I fundamentally agree with you.
Yep.
But I would say that's probably the reason.
Secondly, if you're going to have these cameras and drivers are going to break the limitations of what they need to be controlled within and they get the penalties, just keep on giving them. Eventually, they won't be able to run or they'll get so many penalties that they'll be starting at the back of the grid or disqualified from races. Then they will start learning. It's a bit like the analogy of if you give a foul in the box every time a corner gets swung in the football, penalties get given, eventually they'll learn and penalties will stop being given.
It's a very hard line approach.
Just my thought.
I think that works for qualifying. I think the problem is in the race, it becomes... fundamentally, I don't want a race decided in the steward's office. I don't want a race decided by flags. I don't want to some of the levels of the bitchiness we get in the F1 of, he's just run wide, he needs to be... Yeah. I don't want any of that in touring cars because... Yeah, it's a much more side by side, non-contact sport. And I say I don't want to have race 1 finish and then right up to point of race 2 not know if that result's going to stand because we've now got to argue 15 violations in the stewards' room afterwards. For qualifying, I think I agree with you. It's fairly slam dunk. If you exceed track limits, like you've said, your time doesn't count. And actually, if you do it so many times, you get an extra second you get a grid drop or something to put you off. I think the difficulty comes in the race. I don't think the answer is tyre stacks either because of this incident you've seen with Cook and Chilton and the damage it's caused to Cook's car. And it could have been a lot worse. To be honest, the tyres weren't dragged too far into the track, which is a good thing. But I don't like tyre stacks. None of us do. I don't particularly like sausage curbs either. But I also don't like massive areas of runoff because we're seeing that in the F1 and the more modern tracks. Like the Piastri for Sappen thing the other week, it was so easy to run off there because there's no gravel, there's no deterrent. And there's a very fine line of the deterrent you need to give versus
we've seen
influencing racing too much.
We've seen it at tracks, especially in F1, I'm going to mention that because it is the closest correlation that we have. Places like Austria, where drivers were always running wide at turn 1, they've put in a fairly large sausage curve. They weren't happy with that. No. And at the last corner. So they've introduced a
trench almost of gravel.
Almost a trench of gravel, where if you dip your tyre in, 1, you're going to lose time.
Yeah.
2, you're not going to do much damage to the car, if any. Okay, you might drag a little bit of gravel onto the track. It might cause a few issues, but far less than you're going to do from running over a curb and damaging something or running into something a lot more solid.
Yeah.
Now, if we saw that on the inside and we made the limit of the track on the inside of the chicane a much harsher limit, I don't think we'd see that as much, but you've also got to take into account that the cars are so much different to the ones in
the race side by side. So you can go 2 abreast.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. And it's not often I sympathise with Alan Gow, but I do I do have some sympathy here in that the drivers can't have one's cake and eat it. You can't complain about what is being used to stop you from, and this, it's effectively cheating. It's gaining an advantage,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether you call that cheating or you call it gaining an advantage, it's a spectrum, isn't it? They've introduced them to try and reduce that, and it's been completely ignored by the drivers. Now, some of the drivers, probably not all of them, but it's a real tricky one. Because also you can't forget with the touring cars, when you compare it to F1, F1 is 1 hour and a half long race, where there's plenty of time for stewards to decide things on the circuit. You've got to fit three races.
So the only thing that I would say about that is, with having this camera technology in, you can almost have, if you had, get more technical, you had lasers that are broken each time.
Yeah, but that's now more money and more tech.
I know, but we have pressure pads already.
Yeah, but again,
if you hit a pressure pad and you activate that, then it's cut and shut, it's done.
Yeah,
you don't even have to argue it.
Again, I'd argue
there is still the interpretation at the moment.
Yeah, but again, the budget of MSV will be bigger than the budget of Croft, I'm imagining. I mean, I'm not an accountant, but I imagine the budget of MSV is going to be bigger than the budget of Croft as a standalone circuit, not Kill as a standalone circuit.
Yeah.
Silverstone, which does whatever it fancies.
Pleases.
It's tricky, and I think that everyone's got a part to play, and I think that I was a bit disappointed that, if you take the tyre stacks out, you're not going to get rid of track limits completely. But I was a bit, I read the Autosport article today and I was very disappointed just how many there was. Mm. Whatever you do, you're never going to eradicate it because people always run wide or,
try to take advantage.
Test the limit and, find out their own limitations. But
it's the reason why they get like three chances before a black and white flag. Yeah,
but the number was disappointing, shall we say.
So as you say, that brought out the safety car.
Yes.
And we had a few laps under safety car to get those tyres, move back into the right position, clear up some of the debris as well, because we didn't want more debris on track to create more punctures.
Talking of, Camish got a puncture just as the safety car was sort of being deployed. It did at least mean he'd get into the pit lane and catch the pack up.
Yeah, he didn't lose a lap.
Which is good. No,
which was the most important thing.
Which is crucial for him. Shevlin was also able to get back out onto the racetrack taped up. It was mentioned in commentary by Tim Harvey. Yes, it was mentioned in commentary by Tim Harvey that in the good old days he would have just been able to find a tyre stack and whack it off himself. So good call back to any sort of touring car fans of days gone past there. With the safety car, that extended the race to 21 laps. We did, of course, see our first new safety car restart, which Chris messed up and got wrong, basically. I had to take to the grass to avoid the action. What I will say is that it definitely kept the cars closer together.
Yeah.
Which is what it's been bought in and designed to do. And it certainly kept the cars closer together for the restart.
Too close, he may argue.
Too close, he may argue, indeed. A great move then by Hill to overtake Cook and Chilton going down the Craners. Rainford would then be off the road himself, potentially with a puncture further up the road. Dorlin also off the road as well.
Yeah, there were quite a few incidents in race one. It was certainly action-packed. And for the rest, after the safety car, Ingram did start to rain in Sutton and was really on his back bumper for the majority of those final laps.
But never really put him under any great pressure. I mean, he didn't, did he? He stuck the nose in, I wouldn't say half-heartedly, because that makes it sound as a bit harsh, but yeah, he wasn't making Sutton perspire overly, I would say.
No, and I think I said to you on race day, he's got to get up a little bit earlier to know where to put those moves in, because we were sitting down viewing at the old hairpin. And I was like, you're not going to do something there. You've got to find somewhere clever, somewhere that he's probably not expecting to actually make a move to surprise him.
Go through the pits. Right. That pretty much summed up the first race. So it was Sutton from Ingram from Rowbottom, who, let's just mention, actually, Dan Rowbottom, back in sport after his heart surgery in the off-season. That was a really good podium for Dan Rowbottom. I'm really pleased to see him, A, recovered, and B, able to get straight back onto that podium step. Really good for him.
I kind of hope we're going to see the Rowbottom of a couple of seasons ago when, yes, Napa were dominant, but Rowbottom had a really good season that year as well.
Hill came home fourth. Great result from Mike Doble in fifth. Josh Cook in sixth. Yes, it was race two. It had a problem. I was thinking, have I got that right? Then Chilton in seventh. Camish in eighth. Moffat, who I'm just going to say was up from 20th to get to ninth. Yeah. Bad day to be a part of the Moffat out fan brigade. Smiley in 10th. Patterson on his return, scoring points in 11th. Lloyd in 12th. Pearson, post-penalty, finished 12th. Hall, debut points for him in 14th. Yep. And Dowd de Leon, who had been higher but fell back through the field in the last lap, unsure why.
There was a lot of shuffling in that.
Lots of shuffling, yeah.
There. It seemed that every lap that they came round, another driver, although they were too wide, was in a different position.
Did you want to do penalty corner at the end of each race or at the end of the review?
Yeah, so in this race, due to the incident between Chilton and Cook, Chilton was awarded a penalty, mm-hmm. which therefore reversed the positions between the two drivers at the end of the race, which is kind of fair.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning that Osborne received an official reprimand for yeeting off Lloyd at the gravel trap, and he also received a 1 second penalty for gaining an unfair advantage with Dow De Leon. So two blots on the Osborne copybook by the end of race one.
Yeah, so we're going to bring you up to date with our live reaction now, which we recorded at the circuit, and then we'll get straight into race two.
So that is race one conducted, concluded.
Yes,
both work.
Plenty of incidents.
It was like a race three of the final race of the season, anyways. Lots of incidents, lots of people going off and crashing.
Lots of people going through the pits, good, what, four or five pit stops.
Yep.
People falling through the field as well.
Dan Camish title charge, 27th of April to the 27th of April. We hardly knew you. It's a long way to go, of course, but not the greatest result for Dan Cam. He obviously fell through the field following an incident.
He recovered pretty well back to eighth, but it's noticeable how slow the BMWs are.
You say that, but Hill got fourth.
He did, but a lot of people fell off in front of him, which really did help. Only three drivers on the soft tyre for the first race, so it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic changes throughout the weekend. Obviously, we've got the top three going onto the hard tyre now in race two.
Can I just say as well, like, for someone that is a little bit of a meme at times, Rowbottom had a really solid start there. Good, comfortable podium, was never really under any pressure. Put pressure on Camish until Camish had his problem as well. Good start by Rowbottom. However, from my point of view, we said coming into this season that it was one of three. And that first race, to me, they're in the field on their own already, aren't they?
I think it might be one of two, mate.
Well, the BMW could get better as the season goes on, but the fact that he's finished fourth with a poor car is massive. But yeah, I mean, Sutton and Ingram are so far ahead of everybody else, it wasn't even funny.
There looks like there's going to be plenty of battles in the midfield and at the lower end of the grid. Plenty of drivers swapping positions all the way throughout that race, so I think it's going to be really interesting to see who can pick up those minor points when they can. I think we'll probably see maybe every driver score points this season.
I agree.
Looking at how the race was set out today, at least. But yeah, we'll bring you up to date with...
I've got a final point for you before you close off.
Yes.
Dexter Patterson winning the Jack Sears. My boys. I'm a boy rather. There's a racer in there.
Yeah, we'll bring you up to date with race two next. So, race two then, the top three start on mediums, which was a rule change for this season. Start on the hardest tyre that they could, which meant that, obviously, the rest of the drivers behind had the pick and could go on to the softs if they wanted.
Yeah, though conversely, and this isn't really Toker's fault, the way the day was with the heat, etc., it's probably better to be on the medium tyre in race number two. Osborne wouldn't get out for this one. No. Your reporter on the ground... saw a front engine or engine out on the block being changed going into race number two. I assumed it was an engine change. It wasn't. It was a clutch problem, but of course, front wheel drive car. So he was unable to get out, which is a bit of a shame for him. Obviously, not what you need in the Jack Sears competition for this season.
No, and Dobble had some issues on the grid where he couldn't get the car restarted and so forth. Therefore, he had mechanics on the grid too late and would therefore receive a drive-through penalty, which was a real shame because the speed that he showed for the rest of the weekend, he was really competitive, probably top seven pace all weekend.
I hate that rule.
I know.
But I don't know how you change it because you've got to draw the line somewhere. I hate any rule that punishes a driver and it's not their fault, but... Well, it isn't F1, it's not Ferrari. You can't give them a fine because a fine for PMR could legitimately knock them off out of business in terms of racing. So it's a real tricky one. I hate it. I really hate it because Dobble's done absolutely nothing wrong.
Do you think there should be like a penalty point in the championship or something like that for it?
Maybe something, whether the team loses points or something.
Yeah.
I don't want the driver to lose points because he's done nothing wrong. But then equally on the flip side, if it's just a team... Will you start to see people taking the mickey with, well, we can stay on the grid that a little bit longer, get that bit of extra performance somehow? I don't know. I get why the rule's there. It's a bit like in F1. I know we talk about F1 a lot today. When you get an unsafe release, the driver gets the penalty. He's not done anything wrong, but how else do you punish it? It's just one of those really crappy situations for Dobble, sadly.
Yeah, he started the race off really well as well, which was a shame, because he then had to take it within those first three laps, which meant that he dropped all the way to the back and then had to start fighting his way back through, and was never able to get back to the same sort of position that we would have probably expected him to finish in.
Out front, Ingram and Robottom sort of bogged down on the grid, which was a bit of a surprise. It meant Hill was able to get into third. One thing I did notice of Hill's start is that Demon off-the-line start wasn't quite there. I don't think the real drivers...
Must be the weight distribution, mate.
Well, you laugh, but potentially.
It could well be.
But it didn't quite have the start that we saw at last season. Of course, it's also worth remembering that we are in the first round of the weekend. Yep. Boosts will no doubt be adjusted as the season goes on. It's one of those things. It will change as the season goes
through. Yeah, it's interesting to see how some of the, quote, boost passes happened this weekend. There was a move that I think Camish made on Hill coming out of Coppice, and then he just absolutely pulled away down the back straight with that boost advantage.
It's like you're at an arcade game, you press the NOS button,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a little artificial, but it's going to be really difficult to try and almost level it out.
One interesting thing that I'm sure people picked up on commentary, we've not had a chance to rewatch all three races yet, is that the when the boost has been used isn't shown on the timing towers, which means the teams don't know. So they can't be on the radio to say, the only way they'll see it's on the pictures, because the pictures are slightly delayed.
Yep.
So they can't, with the hybrid, they could say, such as on the hybrid.
It's on it now.
Because it was on the timing tower, it's not on this. So obviously they can kick up the head on the window if they're going down the straight, but otherwise it's up to the drivers to sort of decide when and where they use it, and whether they gamble at the bloke behind is about to use it.
That makes a little more sense, because coming to the end of race two, jumping ahead slightly, I understand, Sutton hadn't actually used all of his boost allocation for that race and was still able to keep the lead.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be down to a driver management on that side of things, rather than having your engineer letting you know when it's going to be the best place, best time, how much you got left and stuff like that.
We saw Cook nicked by Hill at 125 miles an hour,
three wide
down the Craners.
As you do.
As I say, there's already some chatter online that this is going to be a really boring season because there's two drivers that are going to win the championship. But actually, take those two away, potentially, and that'll be an interesting battle in its own right.
Yep.
But the rest of the field looks so close together that this could be really exciting in terms of midfield. It'd be a really bad time to be a prediction sealed in a gaffer taped shut envelope, because to be honest with you, at the moment you might as well just draw names out of a hat, because it looks so competitive throughout the field.
Yeah, it was a really good move that he completed down into the old hairpin. Unfortunately, Cook would go on to then have a puncher in this race on the same lap as Charles Rainford, actually. Rainford actually pulled off coming out of old hairpin and didn't actually complete the lap to get back to the pit, so he was out of the race there and then, whereas Cook had a failure up into McLean's and ran wide into the gravel, handing the position back to Hill and managing to get back round to get a new tyre put on.
Prior to that, one of the most unluckiest men in touring car history, Dan Lloyd, had to pull off on lap 5 with a problem. And what's also quite interesting to see was that Hall and Shedden were having a real argy-bargy during this race, which at one point culminated in Hall just shoving Shedden into the gravel trap at the bottom of old hairpin, which was no way to treat a custodian of the sport, a three-time champion. Jokes aside, it's great to see that, I thought Hall raced really well this weekend. Yeah. It's be easy to get overawed by the situation. He was born in 2009. Like, he is 7, is it?
2007.
Okay. Yeah. He's still he's still effectively a child racing. And I thought it was brilliant. I thought he adapted really well. And I thought it'd be easy to get overwhelmed in that situation and sort of,
well among drivers that he'd never raced against before. Yes, he's shared the same track of testing and stuff like that. But being put into a race situation in a car like that and in an atmosphere like that as well is going to be completely different. Yes, he's been on the Toka package and he knows how to race in the minis. And dare I say, some of that midfield racing was a bit like being in the minis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But equally, it'd be so easy to think, oh my God, I'm up against literal people I watched racing growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to barge them into the gravel chair. No, I think brilliant. I thought Hall was fantastic this weekend.
Yeah, Toyota's issues continued, though, with Aaron Taylor-Smith having further issues, a weekend to forget for him, unfortunately. I think he'll be just willing to move on to brands and, move on quickly.
And people who don't know wheel knowledge, Camish started to reel in Hill with a few laps ago, and the man next to me said, there's absolutely no way Camish will catch up to Hill with these last few laps left. There's not enough time.
He was on a charge in this race, wasn't he, Camish?
Yes, he was.
He just kept on going, and managed to get a third place overall, which I was quite surprised by.
Yes, he was able to get past, which, as you say, completely surprised you, because you'd written it off completely. Mm. Smiley was really competitive this weekend, and actually said in an interview after the race that, you know, he was so happy to be in a car he felt he could do bits in.
Yeah.
Those weren't exact words. But yeah, he was in a competitive car and he feels sort of like he's back in the mix of it. And he made a lovely move down the crane and curves. He actually did this move quite a few times over the weekend where he just set it up coming out of the first corner and then be able to nip round down the crane and curves.
Hopefully that will give Lloyd some encouragement being in the same car. Obviously, they've both raced it before. We mentioned it in the season preview. And it will be a car where they can build on and benefit from that knowledge of Accelerate.
All of which meant that Sutton came home to take another fairly simple win. Sutton from Ingram from Camish, Hill another fourth, which, given some of the problems BMW have had coming into this weekend, not a bad result. Rowbottom fifth, Chilton in sixth, Moffat, again, good points for Moffat. Yeah. Smiley, the leading independent driver, in eighth. Patterson, ninth. Good result for him, the leading Jack Sears driver in that race. Morgan, who I'm just going to mention here, came from effectively the back of the grid to 10th. Really good race. And actually, I mentioned about Smiley, I mentioned about Chilton. Morgan seems already so much back at home in front-wheel drive car. He looked a lot more racy this weekend, a lot more punchy. Yes, there's a few problems with him during qualifying. Morgan has problems in qualifying, we know this.
And again, in race three, he looked really consistent and really quick and comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's going to be interesting as the season goes on is that obviously Tom Ingram is the best driver at Virtue, but I'm not sure he's going to be the runaway. But I think he'll finish ahead of the other two. What I'm saying is I think they're going to be way more competitive this year. As we'll get to in race three in a moment. But it looks a really quick, strong team. Sheddon in 11th, De Leon 12th, Hall second points finish of the day for him, 13th. Dorlan getting his first BTCC points for himself, and Jelly into 15th place as well.
Yeah, we did another live reaction for race two, so let's hear that now. Race two has finished then, and a little bit of the same of race one, really. Sutton and Ingram well out front and fairly dominant by the look of it.
Yeah, I would say that early on, that pace in the Napa across the board really looks ominous. Obviously, Cameron's having to fight his way through to a podium finish as well. Hill lacked pace all through the race. He got onto the back, but never really troubled him. And I suppose my biggest worry as well would be that that's two fairly, I say worry, it's quite a massive thing to say at this stage, but Sutton's won those two very comfortably. Ingram didn't put a lot of pressure on. I know it's early in the season, but not a great deal of pressure from the off.
Yeah, Cook looked fairly quick early on until he had a mistake up at McLean's and ran wide, which put him back possibly a puncher. We don't know as of yet. But for the other drivers, Patterson looks like he's going to possibly take home the Jack Sears for this weekend.
I've been telling you.
Two wins already. De Leon dropped back through the pack, unfortunately losing the lead in Jack Sears for that race. And Dobble had an early pit stop as well, which was a shame because you kind of tipped him for that race, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought he might, you know, maximise with the pace he showed in race one. I expected Ingram and Sutton to suffer more than they did in that race.
So did I.
In the end, really, you look at it, not a lot of movement in that race, which is interesting in its own right.
It'll be interesting to see how it all pans out for race three. We don't know the ball that's been picked yet for the reverse grid, but I think if it's a low one, we could certainly see Sutton and Ingram getting back, possibly even to a podium, maybe even the unthinkable, all three for Sutton with a race win.
It's early in the season. There's no point going overboard yet, but what I will say is that I think it's a two-horse race already.
Yeah, so do I.
I think that's going to be clear as the races go by.
Yeah, I think Hill will probably fall away quite early this season, and I think that's just the general pace of the BMW. Rainford unfortunately didn't manage to finish this race with an issue, stopped just coming up between Old Hairpin and McLean's.
And Osborne didn't get out
for an engine change, which greatly disappointed you, didn't it?
Well, I went for Pearson and Jack Sears, so yeah, I'm more disappointed by my life choices, to be honest.
And Aaron Taylor-Smith again didn't manage to finish this race, so two non-points finishes already.
Toyota are currently winning my award for villain of the weekend, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's not looking good. It looked so promising with Pearson, first of all, being so high in qualifying. But we'll see what race three brings, and we'll get on to that now.
Right, well, going into race three, we have got, obviously, somebody's got a contact with Barry Hearn.
Slightly new system.
Yep, obviously, somebody's got a contact with Barry Hearn, and we've got some old snooker balls that have been sort of carved into. Let's just, without getting too legally and lawyery.
There was plenty of controversy last season.
Yeah, whether you think it was intentional or not.
And I'm glad it's been adjusted.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter. The thing was, there was controversy last year about whether drivers were able to manipulate what ball they pulled out by looking into the glass bowl and picking out the number, which, or looking over the top of it, or whatever you want to call it, and picking out the number that they wanted. This year, we've got a sort of, if you're a football fan, you might remember the Champions League balls that are sealed shut and you unscrew them and you then get Ashley Cole mispronouncing a name or something. You know, it is like that. So this year, you pick the ball out. They're all completely unmarked. They're all the same colour, same size, same shape. You pick it out, you unscrew it, and you hold it up to the camera, and Sutton pulled number six. It's a really good and, I think, quite quick and efficient way of fixing a problem that may or may not have existed, but it now takes any doubt out of the equation.
Do you know what it signifies, though, that they've listened to social media and they've listened to the little fuss that was kicked up because of it?
I think they listened to the drivers as well, because I think that the drivers would have made a bit of a fuss, perhaps not publicly, but I think that there'd have been some words between teams and management throughout the off-season to say that...
In briefings and stuff like that.
Whether or not it was manipulated last year, we can't have this controversy again. Let's find a way to fix it. And do you know what? Actually, with the coverage as well this weekend, they had a lot more interviews with drivers. They had a lot more sort of interviews with drivers away from the track as well. So they had a section where basically fans had written in and asked Hill questions.
Yep.
The coverage, I thought, was a lot better from what I've seen. I've not had a chance to watch it from start to finish, but for the bits I've seen for the touring cars, they've also had Louise interviewing Porsche drivers on the grid as well. Okay. I think that the penny may finally have dropped. Let's see if it carries on for the rest of the season. But they also interviewed like the winning independent driver after a race win as well.
Dare I say?
I think the penny may... Just made the point. A penny may have finally dropped that drivers need exposure to get onto this grid, and you can't just keep giving Sutton and Ingram air time because they're always winning. You need to be looking at the drivers up and down the grid.
Dare I say that is possibly because there is now more space on the calendar.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Or for the schedule, should I say, for the Sunday.
Yeah.
Which they always try to cram as many races in as possible for the entertainment value for the fans that are out the circuit. I understand that. But there has also got to be the commercial benefit for the drivers that are there. And this seems like a good compromise and a good bit of progress.
Let's see what happens at Brands. And let's just hope it wasn't just the start of the season excitement. But good early sign. As somebody that's been quite critical of the coverage at times, it's only right that you also give the... It's only right you give the positives as well, where you see them.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, ball six was pulled out, which meant that Chilton was promoted to pole position. Him, Ingram and Rowbottom would all be starting on soft, so possibly a more optimal tyre, certainly as the day got a little bit longer, a little bit cooler. We had a little pre-match bet, didn't we, as to whether we thought that Sutton could possibly take all three. And he came close, but not quite good enough, especially with those drivers on the soft tyre.
But I also think that, going back to my point I made a few moments ago about how close I think it's going to be at Virtue this year, Chilton just didn't put a foot wrong this way
and was
bloody quick.
He was.
And that's going to be a really good, promising sign, I think, for that side of things. So you say lots of drivers had saved their soft for this one, which makes sense. Traditionally, you would certainly look to do that. At the start of the race, Kreese had to take to the grass to avoid a slow haul. In fairness to Kreese, it was a evasive action. We've seen, I think, Collard did that years ago and into the barriers. Nick Hamilton was also pushed into the gravel at turn one.
Got the going again.
Then Chilton, basically from the start, got away with ease. BMW with no major line gap launch, people, as we've covered. Yeah, absolutely gap people. Ingram nipped by Hill down the craners when Sutton followed him through. Hill rather got mugged at this point, didn't he?
Yeah, it was sort of like an open the door and everyone sort of like passed through. Sutton followed Ingram through, and then a lap later, Camish made pretty much an identical move.
Moffat also showed no respect to to the former champion, the current reigning champion, by slipping in front of him too. Smiley decided that looked quite fun and decided he was going to get involved in that. Morgan and Shedden also seemed to look at each other and go, that looks like a bit of fun, and also got past Hill. Whether he was looking to save tyres and hope that he was going to come back to him during the race, or they got the setup wrong, not sure, but this was the weakest race by far for Hill.
Yeah, and I think for BMW as a whole, apart from Moffitt, who had a fairly consistent weekend, finishing just inside the top 10, it was a very much up and down situation for them.
The Chronicles of Rowbottom would happen next. Basically, effectively waved Ingram through.
Yep.
again, tyre offset perhaps. And then he let Sutton through without any contest. And that is very...
I said it was going to happen.
Yes, but it's, one can only assume it's the tyre offset that wasn't quite working for Robot on the soft tyre. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it wasn't quite working. He was letting, because it's so early in the season to be letting Sutton through. Yeah, I know he's your number one driver. I know that Napa are going to be putting all the bets on him winning the championship, despite what they might tell Kamish.
Yeah.
But it's race three. Chilton didn't slow to the Ingram
free. Dare I also say, Ingram made the move on Robottom look quite easy into Redgate as well.
Robottom literally waved him through.
Yeah, I found quite strange,
yeah,
especially being on the same tyre. But
I think Robottom was potentially nursing a little bit of an issue on this race because he did fall back through and he would let Kamish through a little bit later. And yes, Morgan was also able to nip by him fairly easily as well. To be honest with you, nothing really happened in this race. Sutton began to reel Ingram in with three laps to go.
Yeah, Smiley, Moffitt and Morgan all had really good race pace in this one and were able to make progress through the field. Obviously, Hill being one of those casualties. But considering how the weekend started for Morgan, it was a really strong finish. Lloyd had a fire towards the end and had to stop. Unfortunately, we think some grass may have caught a light in the engine bay because he was then able to drive the car back round to the pits after the race had finished.
Yep.
And then Patterson went off up at McLean's.
Yeah, we don't know how, don't know why, but he did go off at McLean's and they decided to cover that section by yellow. Sutton did have a go at Ingram during this part of the circuit on the final few laps. He says he didn't see the yellow flag didn't come up on his dashboard and therefore he only caught it out the corner of his eye after the move was completed, so obviously let Ingram back through. Rookie error, because I think even if you know the dashboard isn't working, there's still flashing flags around the side of the circuit. I still prefer to see a Marshall Williams. I think that's clearer to the driver personally than a flash, but let's not go down that route. There's not enough time. We'll talk about another day, I'm sure. But look, as a Sutton defender and as someone who always speaks well of Sutton, I can't really defend this. It's a very rookie error.
Yeah, but he did also realise his error and gave it back within the next straight.
Yeah,
had
they made more contact and both gone off, you then run.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, and obviously in one of the mini races, we saw a snatch that made me incredibly angry as well, but there we go. There's not time for that today. Chilton won that race with absolute ease, leading home a first 1-2 of the season for Virtue. If you had said to me at the start of the season it would have been Chilton that got the first win, I would have been very surprised indeed. Sutton came home for podium place in third, Kamish fourth, Morgan fifth, looking really racy, as we said, Robottom sixth, Dobble seventh. Great recovery drive from him.
Yeah,
from
really good.
The grid. Then Smiley, Moffat, Hill, Cook, Aaron Taylor-Smith. Good to see him get some points on the board. Sheddon in 13th, Pearson 14th, and De Leon in 15th.
Yeah, so we'll quickly get on to the driver of the day, first of all. We'll go through our driver, villain, surprise good, surprise bad, and then we'll get on to our predictions very quickly at the end.
Right then, so on to the final bits for the podcast and starting off with our individual driver award. So for those who may be new this season, at the end of each race weekend, we go for our driver of the day, often not agreeing, villain of the day, surprise good and a surprise bad for the weekend. Do you want to kick us off with driver of the day? We may agree on this one.
Yeah, so for my driver of the day, I'm going to go for Ingram. I think it was a toss-up between the two, between him and Sutton. Yes, Sutton taking two victories. I was kind of expecting Napa to be quite strong this weekend anyway because of what happened in testing. But 3 second-place finishes leaves Ingram second in the championship. You're right there.
I now know how Gary Neville felt. That's all I'm going to say.
Leaves him second in the championship and in a really prime position going forward. And unfortunately, I do think it's going to be down to the two of them this season because I assume you've gone for Sutton.
Yeah, but I mean, Sutton won a race, Ingram didn't. Sutton won a race, Ingram didn't. Sutton put it on the front row, Ingram didn't. So I'm going to say, and also you could argue Ingram and Sutton in the final race with the less favourable tyre, also got the podium. So yeah, whether you think that's going to be good or not, I think it's irrelevant, really. Sutton is leading the championship. He looks ominously quick. He's still overtaking like an absolute demon. Ingram's done very well this weekend. I would not deny it at all. However, I'd say he could have perhaps been a little bit more aggressive with Sutton, though I also understand on the first weekend of the season, you're not going to be going three sheets to the wind as it was. But no, it's Sutton, driver of the day.
Villain of the weekend, I think we actually do agree on.
Toyota baby. Yeah. So much hope coming into the season. Promises, yeah, I know. Going,
yeah, we've made big improvements to the car. And I thought, Pearson, Hall, good qualifying. Are we going to see some decent racing from Toyotas? And to be fair, his race pace in race one, after the full start, was okay.
But he wasn't fantastic either. He never really troubled the podium places, did he?
No.
Yeah, even because in some ways you think, well, as I've got this penalty, I might as well push as hard as I can and get as far forward as I can. To, and he was never banging on the door of the podium places. Now, if Pearson's defence, first race out in a brand new car, I'm not saying he should necessarily be doing that.
Same for all four drivers, remember?
Yeah, I know, but I just... The pace in the car today. A circuit we know they go well at.
A couple of points in, I think, all three races, all four Toyota cars were together at some point.
Yes.
And it was in, like, the mid-teens for places.
Yeah. Things can only get better for Toyota, but I did expect them to be a little bit better than they were this weekend. Mm. I will just counteract that slightly by saying I wasn't expecting a domination by drivers like we've seen this weekend, i.e. having, you know, two drivers on the podium for all three races. I didn't see that coming either. So yeah, there is that as a sort of mitigation for Toyota. But look, they weren't particularly quick in qualifying, Pearson aside. They weren't particularly quick in the race. And I just felt they all lacked a little bit this weekend.
Yeah. Moving on to the surprise good then. And for me, it is Chilton.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I really didn't see Chilton taking the first win for Virtue out of the drivers that were there. And we've always been a little, is he over the hill? Is he past it? But I think he's really feeling settled now at Virtue.
He looks rejuvenated as well. He looks really happy. He himself has said he's lost a bit of weight as well.
With a car under him that I think he can have some confidence in now.
Yeah, yeah. Barry Plowman was his engineer as well.
Could we see a possible resurgence from him this season and be maybe best of the rest or better?
He won't be fighting for a championship. I'm putting that out there now. Although I think he's third in the standings as we record.
He is, yeah.
But we've seen, without trying to put the dampeners on the Chilton party, we've seen him start a season strongly in the past and it all fall apart in a ball of flame. I mean, literally last season comes to mind. Yeah. However, for him and for the team, I hope this is a good, a start of a good season for him. I can see why he went as your good surprise. A little bit abstract to a degree. It was actually the race pace of the BMWs. Now, obviously, none of them qualified particularly. No, hear me out. They didn't qualify
particularly. My Ingram shout was weird. Okay.
They didn't qualify particularly well. Yeah, particularly well.
Right, yes.
They lacked pace at testing. There was this whole, lots of people going, oh, BMWs aren't quite good. It's going to be difficult.
Including me.
Yeah. It's going to be a difficult season. Hill second, two fourths. Moffat was very racy in this as well. And Rainford as well was right. The thing is, all four of the cars were able to be racy. They were able to make overtakes, stick it in the pack. Look, they're not super. They're not as quick as last year. That is undeniable. However, there was a lot of, oh gosh, they really are going to be struggling, and they are struggling. But I was pleasantly surprised to see Moffat was able to come from the back of the grid through the pack and score good points. Rainford had a lot of bad luck this weekend, but was at times running high. De Leon, first time in rear wheel drive, picked up points, was looking good as well. Again, he got shuffled down twice in the racing.
Can I caveat?
You can.
Hill and Moffat. In that they stayed out of trouble. And yes, that is part of the race, part of the way that you gain places and you keep places throughout a race and a season. But I felt a lot of it was given to them rather than them necessarily earning it.
I would agree more on that with Hill. I don't think you can come from the back or towards the back of the grid into good point scoring position purely based on people falling off the road.
There were a lot of people falling off the road.
But that's right in front of you. You've managed to stay out of it. I'm just saying that I came in with such low expectations for the BMW this weekend, and that was backed up really by qualifying results as well and FP practice results. And actually, they weren't as far off in the race as I thought they might be, and that's why they were surprised good.
Okay, fair enough.
My surprise bad for the weekend then, and I'm just going to stand an inch or two taller on my soapbox.
Dare we say that we actually agree on this one?
Yeah, look, they've decided, the powers that be, that we've got to run different tyre compounds during the race weekend.
Something that we have had to deal with for a good couple of years now.
But if you're going to do it, make sure that you deliver a tyre that is up to the task, basically. Now, had it been one puncture, had it just been Cavendish's puncture, I'd have probably gone, do you know what? The Napa has always historically struggled to get a soft setup, apart from on Sutton, but we know about Sutton. I think Sutton's driving style is so unique in the car, et cetera, et cetera. We know that Cavendish had problems on the soft before. That's not necessarily a surprise that he's had a puncture this weekend, but Morgan, Cook, Camish, Rainford. That's four different cars, four different manufacturers, and four very different styles of driving, and they've all got punctures.
Do you know what was quite interesting as well? Rainford's puncture was on the rear.
Yeah.
As well. So they're all driving tyre punctures. They're all front for the front-wheel drive, rear for the rear-wheel drive. I think they've got it slightly wrong this weekend, and they probably should have bought a medium and a hard. But I think the weather might.
I think the weather has caught them out. I agree with that. But then I also think to yourself that you've got to be a little bit fluid with that. And if the weather has caught you out, you go, actually, we're going to, it's medium for the weekend. We're going to just drop the soft tyre as an option. Or you give everybody the chance to make up their own mind when they run the damn thing. And then they can then adapt to the weather conditions.
Will you run all three?
I don't know that. No, that was rubbish at Snetterton when they did that year. As I say, if you're going to bring a tyre, which everyone's, you know, you're going to use different compounds, etc., it's got to be up to the task. And this weekend, four is not a coincidence, and on four different cars and four different drivers. And you take Rainford out of that, three very experienced drivers who know how to look after tyres caught out by it. That's not good enough, is it?
No. We'll move on to our predictions now then.
No, there's no time.
As you may or may not know, we do our predictions every race weekend leading into it. Who we think can take qualifying pole position, three race winners across the weekend, Jack Sears winner for the weekend, and also three general predictions, and a bit of a random one as well.
Which we'll cover again at the end of this, but we'll get this out of the way first. Yep.
So for pole position, you went for Ingram.
I did.
I went for Sutton. We were both wrong on that. Very close. But wrong, with Camish taking pole position, so we didn't get any points for that. And then race winners, we had two the same, which was Ingram and Cook, which we got wrong. And then I had Sutton, and you had Shedden. Shedden was fairly well off the pace.
Yeah, it was going to be a reverse grid when I was envisaging, and it didn't come to fruition. I can't argue that.
But obviously Sutton took two wins this weekend, and then Pearson for the Jack Sears.
Yeah, this is just testament to what we've said in our Jack Sears preview video, that the way to win the Jack Sears is to finish the races. Mm. Pearson wasn't... I mean, Patterson had two Jack Sears wins.
Yeah, Patterson took Jack Sears win in race one and race two, but didn't finish crucially in race three, which meant he scored no points at all, only scoring 40 for the weekend. And Pearson, the eventual winner, scored 48 this weekend.
It's what happens when you finish races. So we both got a point for that.
Yes.
Our general predictions didn't go as well for me. So for general ones, I went for Michael Kreese to score points, which never really looked likely, no matter how hard I was sort of
challenging. You were willing, weren't you?
Yeah, it didn't work out. Nice. I had three different podiums. That was correct. Only just, I have to say. Yeah. A lot closer than I anticipated that being. And I also had De Leon to have more sponsorship on the car, which I'm amazed there wasn't. But there wasn't. There's no arguing.
We did joke partway through the day that Russ wasn't allowed to go and write down the side of Leon's car, British Touring Car Podcast.
Put my sticker on it.
Yeah.
No, I'm absolutely stunned that there's no more on it. And that would suggest there is going to be no more on it as the season goes on, which I find absolutely baffling.
And
it
almost signifies that he is now a BMW driver.
Yeah, but put BMW finance down the side. It looks rubbish. It's so empty.
But at least he's easy to spot, and hopefully Tim Harvey won't get too confused. My predictions, however, were Sutton to three top six finishes. He did
wrong. You got three top threes.
Even better than that. So
yeah, at this point,
BMW to miss out on the Super Six, which I was quite pleased at. And then Cook podium and top scorer Indy, which
neither happened,
and he probably didn't have the weekend that he thought he was going to have.
No, and then we have a circuit-specific one, and that's why I'm going to, quickly before we jump in there, we need your help on this one. We're going into Brands, get your thinking caps on for anything we can do for Brands. It's specific to the circuit. This weekend, it was my birthday weekend. I like rum, and we were at the circuit, so we decided we'd see how much a double rum would be without the mixer.
You were quite hopeful when you bought your first pint, weren't you?
Well, my pint cost £6.90 for a pint of Estrella. We're not saying, it's a decent lager. If the people at Estrella are listening, it's very nice, but... £6.90. I was thinking, well, the rum's going to be expensive then. So if you've got anything you can think of for Brands Hatch, we are going to Brands Hatch, all being well. But if you've got any prediction or anything you think we should consider for that, do let us know.
So
in terms of the rum itself, I'm livid and happy because I got a rum at a decent price, but livid because...
This was for a double measure, which is your normal measure, isn't it? And it was
legally, yes.
And it was £4 per shot. So £8 overall, which meant I won with £11. Still a little on the high side. But I think if you included the mixer, it was bang on.
Yeah, we weren't including the mixer.
No. So you went for £12.60, which was miles high.
Yes, but however, your face did drop when I said I'd pay $6.90 for a pint.
Yes, yes, it did.
So, you know, yeah. So all that means that you are 5-2 up in the predictions as we go into Brands in a few days' time. What are your final thoughts?
I'm really pleased, first of all, to see that we've had a couple of comments with people's predictions for the season. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't already, do get them in the comments down below, either on YouTube or where you listen to on podcast platforms.
Yeah, if I just interject there before you put your final thoughts, is we're starting to get a lot more comments on the YouTube now, which is really, really good. Looking to grow that community this year for sure. So by all means, if you're watching us, drop a comment. We do read them. We do try and respond to them where we can. But do know that
even if it's just dropping a little like on it to acknowledge that we've read it.
Do know that we do read every comment that you guys send to us, apart from the weird requests we got on Instagram for messaging and for following accounts, etc. But actually, somebody on Instagram this week, and I should have checked the name, sent us a really funny meme about the Wingfoot as well. So we love all that sort of content. You may have seen this year they're giving out mini Wingfoots as opposed to the big Wingfoot. And
what everyone wants to
You all know it's a big bugbear behind that whole trophy anyway, and it was to have fans interacting with us, it is really cool. So keep that up for sure.
Yeah, final thoughts from Donington weekend. It was very warm, probably a lot warmer than any of the teams expected. So,
My face
and my legs. It threw up probably what we kind of expected, but a little more to say that there's probably two drivers in this championship hunt going forward. There may be more as the season evolves, but I think it will be an Ingram versus Sutton battle for the majority of the season. But the midfield battle is definitely going to be tight, and there will be chopping and changes of places all the way through the grid. And I think it's going to make for a really interesting battle in that and also in the Jack Sears.
Yeah, just for me, I think that Camish's drive this weekend signified a little bit of an old adage in touring cars, is that you win the championship based on your bad days. Obviously, by midway through race one, we're sort of saying, you've seen in the reaction video, that was the end of his title charge. And actually, it's quite short-sighted because it's clearly not the end of his title charge. He's done very well to recover that throughout the day.
Yeah.
I think, like you, I think it's a two-horse race out front. I think then it's probably potentially a two-horse race behind who gets third and fourth between Chilton and Camish. Long way to go yet, but those two cars look so good. And Napa proving me wrong. Sutton has said in his interviews that they've done a lot of development in the off-season. I didn't see that coming personally based on the potential of them changing car next year. The Ford and the Hyundai have got really good strengths and weaknesses against each other. So I think it's going to be a battle for the ages there. And again, to echo your thoughts there, the midfield racing looks so strong this year. I think a lot of people would have gone Cooks and win the Independence by a mile. Well, actually, I think Smiley and Dobble have both put their flags in the ground this weekend and said it's not going to be that easy. So, a really promising opening start to the weekend. Brands in a couple of weeks' time, a completely different style circuit, much shorter, much quicker. See what happens there. But until then, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to being back with a full Brands preview ahead of the Brands weekend. Until then, thanks for listening as always. Like, share, subscribe, tell a mate, tell a neighbour, tell the postman, whoever it might be about the Touring Car podcast. Always looking to grow. The growth is picking up a little bit at the minute, and that's really cool for us to see. So we want to keep that going if we can.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And until next time, we'll see you soon.